My name is Zora. I'll do a quick introduction. This session is about SharePoint and how we have been moving fast in SharePoint Online. The title says, without breaking things, I need to apologize. That was mostly to attract you guys here. What was the title that you used just now? So it was, I was asked to relax the title to say how we jack with SharePoint Online without anyone noticing. Might be a better phrase. So, show of hands, how many of you consider themselves as a SharePoint administrator? Great. I'll ask a few more questions. How many of you have a deployment of SharePoint on-prem, either 2013, 2016? Great. How many of those are in an enterprise that has more than, say, 1,000 employees? Perfect. Okay, next last question is, how many of you have already had the opportunity to move to the cloud and have a presence in the cloud and your company is running in SharePoint Online? Okay, great. So this session is for you. It's to tell you a little about the behind the scenes, how we do things differently, what's the difference between on-prem and online, and then gather your feedback. Feel free to kind of gather all the questions you have. We'll leave time at the end. There'll be plenty of time to ask this question and we'll stick around. With me, Chris is from our marketing team, and then Lincoln just disappeared. He'll be back, is from the product group, and I'll introduce them throughout the session. Let's talk quickly about what you're going to learn here. One is how we do things in SharePoint Online in order to minimize the impact on you guys running your business. Two is where do we communicate what is coming to SharePoint Online? How can you stay on top of this? And last is what is your responsibility in the new world of running a service? What's your responsibility as an IT administrator? And how can you help us in this journey? Last show of hands, how many of you had the previous session just before this was about Office 365 change management by Mike and Brian and Jeremy? How many of you attended that? Okay, I've got two folks. So some of this is, you're gonna see some slides that overlap that session. This would be specific about SharePoint and how we run SharePoint. A lot of the focus in the earlier session was Office 365 wide. For all the rest that haven't seen it, I would recommend to go see the details there. It's a great session of how we communicate even better and the details on the tools that we're building. So to get started, just to catch you up on where we're at and the journey of SharePoint, my history, my name is Zohar, I'm the GPM for Engineering Velocity today in Microsoft SharePoint. My history is I used to sit in the audience as a customer. Before I joined Microsoft, that was 9 years ago, worked for a large enterprise with 100,000 employees and followed SharePoint all the way from the days of Tahoe, which was the name for just before we shipped 2001. And I would pick SharePoint 2001 and then 2003 and 7, and then I switched over. But in general, every 3 years, Microsoft would release me a package, a CD, and I would install a pre-production environment and try it out and make sure that it doesn't break all the customizations that we used to do in our organization and find a way to move from the current version to the future version. Sometimes we had to skip versions. It was a pretty complicated process, mostly because there was this large set of changes and we had to read through what each one meant and the complexity and then try to map it to our organization. We started a transition to the cloud in 2013. We took the CD of 2013 that we shipped and we installed it in our cloud and offered it to our first early adapters, which was roughly 300,000 companies out there. And from there on, we started updating those binaries without releasing to on-prem. So every half a year, we would do a package, we would release the package, we would put it on all the machines in our cloud, and customers would then enjoy the refresh or complain about it. And we kept going every half a year. That was kind of our cadence when we started. But most of the focus then was, so 2013 till roughly 2015, our focus was doing the impossible. Not many of our critics believed that you can take a product like SharePoint on-prem and make it work in the cloud. And actually, if you look around us, there's many other partners, competitors, big enterprise, big product groups that are trying to take their on-prem product and then make it work in the cloud. And the reason I said it's impossible, because it's near to impossible, and many actually give up. And then instead, they build bottom-up a new product. SharePoint on-prem, as you know it, in 2013 showed up in the cloud. Our two first year were focused on making it work, making it scale. We offered functionality like security performance, four nines or three nines reliability, which is our SLA. We talked about 5 terabytes of storage, larger OneDrives, a bunch of things that we've added. Most of the focus was there. And then we celebrated around end of 2015 success of that, and we started seeing a big shift of enterprises from on-prem to the cloud. And this year, and I hope you guys, well, maybe a show of hands, how many of you have seen Jeff's demo or other SharePoint demos where you've seen all the functionality that we just released or announced? That is a lot of functionality. So I've, you know, in May 4th, or as Jeff called it, the Star Wars Day, we announced a set of functionality, and that was probably in the long journey that you see on the slide. This year, May 4th, was the biggest day for SharePoint since the beginning of that journey in terms of functionality. So if you look at things that I'll show later where we communicate, roughly in the last year, there was about 360 changes Office 365 wide. A lot of them were SharePoint. This was the richest year of SharePoint shipping updates to the service, and most of it, and I'll talk what drove that, was in the online product. So this slide talks about, you know, things I'm stealing from slides that were presented throughout the week, all the functionality that we introduced. It was mostly to modernize our UI. As I said, we shipped our 2013 on-prem product into the cloud, and it was that UI that we that stick around for. And still, if you switch to classic mode, that's the UI you see. We, this year, have modernized it based on your feedback, based on feedback from customers. The cloud allows us to see telemetry that we didn't have insights on-prem, to see what you guys use most, and then we focused our energy on all the things like document library and sites and groups and features that would enable and empower your organization to be as productive and collaborative as possible. A few other things that have motivated us to drive change over the last year is new innovation. So you could see outside of SharePoint, we also introduced things like the video portal and the planner and Sway, and a lot of things started showing up in the Office 365 as a suite. So when I'm asked, hey, what is SharePoint, you know, in on-prem, the answer was it was this web framework where everything was built on top of in your organization in the cloud. That framework now is becoming Office 365, and SharePoint plays a component in that. You guys might be familiar with the what we call the waffle. It's that square on the top left where you get all the tools when you're in Office 365. SharePoint is a piece of that now, together with OneDrive and Exchange and Link and other things. And the last thing that motivated our changes is what we call retiring features. There is functionality that is now in the cloud being replaced by new things. And it's a journey, and the transition is interesting. And I'll let later Chris talk a bit more about how do we do that transition, and how do we handhold customers, and how do we communicate, and how do we do that as professional as possible. So just to complete that story, to differentiate between how things work in on-prem, I was asked here by people that have not moved to the cloud yet. In on-prem, we shipped 2016 lately, and we announced some functionality and feature pack one that is coming in November. Things work slightly different than in the cloud. Historically, you would need to communicate to your customers or your employees that it's Friday, you're taking the deployment down, you're updating it, they come on Monday, there will be a downtime, they need a take their files, make sure that for the weekend or whatever you guys pick is available to them. There's downtime involved. We release monthly packages that also involve or historically involved some downtime. The cloud is different. The cloud is always on. We don't have the privilege to take it offline to update it. And a lot of this talk, I'll show you how we do I call it the sausage factory, the behind the scenes on how do we do the updates while keeping the cloud on and how do we introduce new functionality, new features. The key thing to keep in mind for you is the cloud, the way we approach it is discover early and fix fast. So in the on-prem days, it's get it right out the door because you won't get a lot of opportunity just to fix it. The cloud is we do the best we can in order to discover any issue early and then fix it as fast as we can. So with that, if we talk about the cloud, the analogy I'm going to use is how running the cloud is just like running a restaurant. How many of you are in the restaurant business? Great, so I can make up things. In this analogy, I am running this restaurant, and I want to be the best restaurant in town, the three-star Michelin. And the way to be competitive is my kitchen needs to be as agile and fresh as possible. We do these weekly menus that we release every week, new things on the menu to keep attracting people to our restaurant. Otherwise, our competitors on the other side of the street would take our customers, our audience. And to release a new menu that is worthwhile and worthy, you got to have a set of volunteers that come to the restaurant to try it out and give you feedback. And at the same time, when you roll it out, you know, you've tried it out with one or two customers that give you feedback, you still need to validate that all the customers are going to enjoy it statistically. And the way it works is you start rolling out a new dish or a new menu, and in table number one that gets it, you kind of track it really closely with monitors and feedback and see what the response is as they bite into this potato. And if you notice that the potato is not the response you expected, so you had a hypothesis that they'll be very happy with the new potato, then you, and I'll show that in the demo, you have an opportunity, while everything else in the dish stays the same, to switch their potato to the last known good, to yesterday's potato. So if you see a frown face, then one is you're trying to fix it for that specific customer, but also you make sure that the dish that goes to table two and three and four is already with the corrected dish based on the feedback from table number one. So that's the fail early, fix fast. Let me walk you through how that is in reality what we do in SharePoint Online. So every week we have a new package coming out of our source code where all our developers have checked in new capabilities and they have put those capabilities behind a switch to make them turn off. So they, even though they're in the package, they are dormant. They're supposed to be not disrupted. They don't even show up. And then we start rolling that package. So from the lab, the package starts going into what we call our dog food environment and reaches our 10,000 employees, which is ourselves. So dog food is a term that is in the industry. Eat your own dog food. It is an environment where we do our collaboration internally, and we try out those new binaries, and we make sure that our monitors trigger and our feedback from ourselves captures any issue that we might discover with a new package. And again, all the functionality at this point can be turned off, and I'll later talk about how we turn on functionality. From the dog food environment, we go to the Microsoft environment. The Microsoft environment is the 100,000 employees. We tend to joke that at this point, we're touching Satya's OneDrive and Amy Hood's OneDrive, and we really don't want to break those. The escalations from there go to the product group very, very quickly. So we track the monitors on this 100,000 employee environment. We look at the monitors. We look at any feedback that comes to the Microsoft help desk. And we have the ability, based on that feedback or the monitors, to turn off things if something broken and to move back to last known good, like the analogy that I made with the potato, and I'll show that. We call that the kill switch, and I'll show a quick demo on how that is done. And then once we move from the Microsoft environment into our production environment, we do a quick rollout to 1%. We stop again. Most of the time we spent waiting and looking at the monitors and making sure that those customers that we had the opportunity to give us the feedback before we start rolling it out to the rest of the 99% of our customer base. So at the end of it, we've finished rolling out now the new package train. We call those the trains. They leave the station every week, and it takes them about 2 weeks to, you know, sometimes a bit less, to roll out to the last station in production. And with that, you should imagine now all the packages are across. Everybody has the package or the latest and greatest. And I'll talk about how we start enabling the functionality to show up to different customers, where we could start enabling the new document library to a set of customers, see what the feedback is on that functionality, and then decide how we go further. But the one thing to keep in mind, there's a separation we do between features rolling out and then these packages that are like Windows security updates that just roll out with our binaries to all the machines in our cloud. I'm talking tens of thousands of machines. So a few things I needed to mention in the on-prem slide is in the on-prem, customers have asked us, and what we always did, we do this release note on here's what's in the package, here's the functionality. You could read about it. You could then go and test those functions and see if it's fit and ready for your organization. In the cloud, it's totally different because really when we release these updates and they go every week, there's nothing in the release note that would tell you if you have it or not. It's later when we light up the feature that you start knowing what functions you have and what functions you don't. So I'll talk about communication and the challenges there, but in general, every person in the cloud, and I'll actually show that in the demo, might have a slightly different experience depending on what functionality we lit up for him and whatnot. So with that, let me switch to the demo. And then as this sets up, let me do a quick explanation of what you're going to see. So in this case, this is a company, a tenant, in production looking at his OneDrive, this user. This is, think of him as user number one or Fabricam. And then this is another company, the black line. This would be Contoso. And the image on the left is, the image on the right is Chris. And then if you look closely, you would see that there's a slight difference between the UI, except, you know, the documents that are kept in this document library. There's a very slight difference between the UI that Chris sees versus the UI that you would see in Fabricam. The slight difference is these, we're flighting now, this is real production environment, by the way. We're flighting a new graphical change, a very slightly graphical change, where these are the buttons that are from the old graphic, and we're trying out the new graphics, which is these graphics, and we're looking at the feedback. One thing I'll show is, as these buttons show up, Chris entered again this environment, and you might notice that there is a button that is missing. So this is a critical button, the sync button, which enables you to download all the documents locally. And in this environment, Chris just noticed that he's trying to sync his documents down, and there's a functionality loss. There's a problem. I showed two customers, Fabricam and Contoso. The second customer didn't even notice there's a problem. The reason he didn't notice is because the package has not reached him yet. So the customer that right now is complaining is because the package has reached him. We're in the first station. There's 1%. And we did break a critical functionality. In most cases, 99% of the time, we will discover that ourselves with monitors. And the development team would then react to the monitor. They would be woken up as an alert, get an alert, and then fix it. In this scenario, it could be a scenario where the monitor missed it, and Chris, in this case, had an opportunity to go to the admin center and escalate it, and then support would trigger a service request for us, and they would alert us that there's an incoming load of requests of people complaining that some functionality is lost. One thing I would say is the journey that we started, I didn't mention, we try to do, we try to follow a temperature-based rollout where we have this internal algorithm to pick what we call internally the cold customers to try out the 1% first. And that's before we go to the companies with the hundreds of thousands of active users, and we keep that to the end. So really based on your usage in your company, you would be the kind of, you kind of dictate what station you're gonna pick up what packages. So we put the early customers early, the smaller ones, and then these usually are the ones that might alert us, and it's always a random set. So we have millions of customers, it's a random set of customers that get picked. And in this case, Chris complained. And then I'm gonna switch, to our dev team interface. We have a command line, or we use PowerShell. We trigger a kill switch, this command, if it doesn't error. So maybe the demo won't work. Let's see if I've done that before and forgot to turn it off. In this case, the feature crew activates a kill switch, and what it does, it reverts that specific button to yesterday's behavior. And when I switch back, and in this case it won't work because of the error that you've seen, the sync button would return and you would see the experience as if you were the second customer. So I'm back to Fabricam, and it lets us revert really quickly a specific scope of check-ins and recover such that the rest of the 99% of the companies out there won't even notice that there's an issue. So really this is how we fail early, and we have now the capability to fix extremely fast and keep you in a stable state. Next, I'm back to the presentation. I want to show you the feature or functionality enablement. On top of the packages that have finished rolling out, now becomes the challenge of how do we roll out features or functionality such that they get adopted correctly by the different enterprises, and we are receiving all the feedbacks to each one of the features. We call those flights. They start in our lab. We take them to the dog food environment, try it on ourselves, 10,000 employees. The first thing we do is we look at the hypotheses we made and make sure that whatever we expected the engagement to grow or the key performance indicators, we are actually experiencing that in dog food, and we're ready to go to the next level, which is the Microsoft IT environment. We take it to our Microsoft IT environment, and at the same time, the feature crews work closely with you guys looking for volunteers that we pull into our preview environment. We have different programs in the on-prem days. You might have heard the term TAP. You know, as a past employee or customer of Microsoft, I was an active TAP, used to give feedback through the TAP channel. Here we have these TAP per feature engagements where we work closely with the customers that are gonna receive the feedback, give us the feedback on that functionality. And once we feel that the functionality is ready and the product is ready to go broader, we stop at the next station, which is what we call first release. How many of you are in first release or know what first release means? Perfect. We have two types of first release for the folks that need the introduction. As a company in Office 365, if you're a global administrator, in tenant admin, you can go and select your company or a selected set of users in your company, say the IT departments, into a first release program, which puts you, just like you see on this slide, ahead of everybody else getting the feature. So once you're opted into first release, we make sure that when we roll out the functionality, the new functionality, we light it up in the first release customers, the folks that have decided to be volunteering into our Yeah, just like I use the menu in the restaurant, they give us the early feedback, not only if the product is ready, but if the documentation is ready. We look at how many support calls we get, and based on the feedback that we get from first release, that dictates, we call that internally the itinerary of the flight. That would dictate how fast the rollout from that point on would be until we reach 100% of production. So many questions we get is, me as a customer, how do I know, you guys, you know, you announced this functionality, the new document library, how do I know when does it reach my customer or my employees? And the answer is it really depends on the feedback that we get and how ready we feel that that functionality is ready. And if you want to see it sooner, I'm participating in this nonprofit organization and I happen to create them an Office 365 group for collaboration. And one of the functionality that I was missing this week was that in groups, we're not yet 100% enabled on guest access. So you use groups, you wanna share it externally, and I couldn't share it externally with my peers that were participating in that nonprofit because we're not part of the nonprofit employees, we're just volunteering into it. So I took that nonprofit, which is not a big company, it's 100 folks right now, and opted them in into first release, and then got that functionality and was able to share that with the rest of the outsiders like me that we were guests. So that is an example where you would do something like select the entire company into first release. If it's a large enterprise, we highly recommend not to do that. And the reason is exactly this slide, where you see the functionality early, that means that it's not gotten all the feedback from everybody and it's not fully baked. And even if it is, it's the documentation might not be there and it might not be clear to the customers, and I'll talk about the communication we do to the end user. This is things that we build as we roll into this and we collect feedback, and then Lincoln would walk on stage and show you specifically on a feature that we lately released and what is the experience from the development team and how do we appreciate the feedback that you guys give us in first release and later. So just before I introduce Lincoln, one of the things internally that we invest heavily in is providing a, we call that the flight cockpit, providing the feature crews an interface where they could, for their specific feature, capture all the feedback that is coming from the online customers, see if there's a spike in service requests about how do I use your new functionality, or hey, this functionality just broke this thing or that thing. Lincoln will talk in length of how he uses this dashboard in order to professionally roll out the functionality broader to the 100% of the users. And with that, Lincoln.
For 10 years, and recently I've been a consumer of Zohar's excellent platform for rolling out change. How many of you saw my session on the modern document library stuff? Quite a few, great. We're going to talk a little bit about some of that same stuff here, and I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the story of how that rolled out and what we learned from that experience. First, I want to talk a little bit about modern UI. So I know if you've been going to any of the SharePoint sessions, you've been hearing about our new modern experiences, lists, libraries, pages, team sites, and so on. We're doing all of this modern UI stuff. We're responding to demand from customers for updated responsive experiences in SharePoint. I think if you look at our user voice forum, it's something like number one or number two request is for responsive UI. That makes sense. You know, that's the whole consumerization of IT thing. People use cool, beautiful software in their personal life. They want that when they come to work. And let's face it, over the past few years, really since the beginning, SharePoint, the user experience has evolved pretty deliberately, especially in the past few years as we've been focused on onboarding into the cloud, making the service stable. And so modern UI sort of wipes the slate clean in a lot of ways. Instead of building on top of the aging UI stuff that we have, that's kind of has some problems, it's sort of intertwined with the back end, it's not cleanly separated, it's not something we can evolve super quickly. Modern UI wipes that slate clean, and it starts with using things like open source frameworks, crazy things like Git and Gulp and CDNs. We're really a super productive development experience for us, and tons of potential in the modern UI surface. But fundamentally, it is wiping the slate clean. And so we kind of have to walk a delicate tightrope, because SharePoint is fun, but it's not for fun. It's for getting work done. So as we're shipping these new modern experiences, our first priority is keeping you productive. And that can be tricky, because when you're wiping the slate clean, you kind of have to start with simple use cases. You're starting with something that's great, but doesn't always do everything that the classic UI does. And we want to get that stuff out there quickly. We want people biting into that potato and telling us how it tastes so we can make it better and better and better. So how do we walk that delicate tightrope between getting stuff out, getting evaluations, getting you trying it, while the product doesn't necessarily do everything that the classic experience did? So we ship early, we heavily leverage first release, and we heavily leverage things like the flight dashboard and user feedback to figure out, all right, with this starting point that we shipped, what do we do next? How do we smooth the road from people who are on classic towards modern? What's the backlog of features we have to go through? What are the top adoption blockers? The other thing that we do is we really try to put you in control of the modern UX exposure. So on top of using the first release program and gradual rollout to production, in most or all of our modern experiences, we give you switches to control how much that's exposed to people in your environment. So taking modern libraries as an example, we support modern and classic side by side, and that's a pattern throughout most of our modern experiences. We're totally cool with you staying on classic and rolling out modern to the parts of your environment where it's actually suitable, or waiting for more features and just sitting on classic until we've done a few more turns of the crank and then moving over at your pace. So libraries let you configure it, the tenant, site collection, web, list, and even user session level, and we've gotten some great response from doing that. We're going to continue to enable control like that as we roll out modern experiences. So just going through a little bit of history on the modern library rollout, April 6th happens to be my birthday. If you were in first release, you woke up one day, you loaded up your document library, your classic document library, and you saw this banner at the top. How many of you remember the paint roller banner? Yeah, we got mixed feedback on that, and there's some good parts of that and some bad parts of that. The good part of that is that we kind of allowed evaluation of the experience before it took over anybody's default environment. And we got great feedback on that aspect of it, but we did something a little more subtle when we got around to modern lists. Instead of putting a big banner at the top, we allowed you to pass in a query string parameter, preview equals one or something like that, that allowed you to try the new experience before it took over as the default. And people tended to like that better. The paint roller banner was a little bit disruptive and confusing to, I guess, normal people who came in and they loaded up their work environment and they saw, wait, what's this paint roller? Is this my company pushing this out? Is this some new policy I have to learn? Well, no, it was us trying to encourage evaluation of our new thing. But this was too confusing of a methodology for that. So you're probably not going to see the paint roller banner again from us, but you're going to see things like the query string parameter that allows you to evaluate at your own pace. It sort of allows motivated people to go and try that without confusing rank and file workers in the organization. Let's see, April through June. People bit into our potato and told us, hey, there's some promise here, but it's a little bit crunchy. It needs a little more time in the oven. And we actually ended up rolling out past first release a little bit slower than we thought we were going to. We spent quite a few months baking in first release, and we're super comfortable doing that if we get feedback from first release people that says, hey, it's not quite ready yet, there's some serious deficiencies. And some of these deficiencies we knew about, and others that we sort of learned the severity of the deficiency sort of mid-mortem, and we ended up spending more time in first release while we resolved things like the lack of a first run experience, the lack of theming support, lack of global navigation support, problems with declarative custom actions, etc. And so we spent quite a bit of time hanging out in first release, watching that flight dashboard, looking at the user data, checking out user voice, talking to folks on Yammer. It was a fun few months, and we finally got to the point where, well, we think that it's ready for people in production. We implemented the auto fallback mechanism in modern libraries, which, without geeking out too much about that, I talked more about this in my library session, detects whether you have a customized document library view, customized in a way that the modern UI doesn't support, and keeps you in classic if those features are present. And it's aligned with our sort of pry one goal, which is keeping you productive as we roll out new evolved experiences. So this is kind of a summary of, I guess, maybe good, bad, and the ugly. What are the top lessons we learned? Well, we kind of knew this. Modern UI, it's a big change. It's a significant evolution of the experience. We knew it was going to be a big change, but that really becomes real when you ship it and listen to feedback, and you're reminded, hey, people use this product to get their job done. And even if we made the UI 10 times better objectively, which is hard to measure, people are going to be surprised, and they need time to adjust, and there's internal help desks and help and support collateral within organizations, and it takes time to catch up. We learned it's always good to err on the side of over-communication. So that April 6th date, the date the paint roller banner appeared, that was before the May 4th event. That was our kind of big unveiling of the SharePoint vision. So we were kind of under a little bit of a communication embargo at the time, and so we didn't make a big splash when that banner appeared. So people were surprised, and we don't like to surprise people. We like to delight people, and we learned our lesson very definitively that we don't ship something like that, even if it's not the default thing, even if it's just behind a banner or a query string. We don't do that without making a big splash first over our communication channels. So we love communicating. You're going to hear more and more noise from us. And we knew this, but first release is a production environment. Just because you're in first release doesn't mean you're a beta tester and we can just throw stuff at you. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you think. It's your production environment, and we got to be careful as we roll things out to you. Things we'll keep doing. We really liked that we baked in first release for a few months. We're going to announce things in first release, we're going to ship them, and they might hang out there for a while. Sometimes that makes people impatient. They're like, where's my new feature? Where's my new feature? Where's my new feature? I understand that can be frustrating, but the benefit of incorporating feedback from first release before it goes beyond that is super important to you guys, frankly. We'll continue to put admins and users in control of the modern UX rollout with opt-out switches and control at different levels. And I think you'll see first run experiences be a mainstay as we continue to roll out modern UI. We actually get really good click-throughs on those. The banner, or the dialogue that pops up saying, hey, this is new, click next to see the, to kind of get a tour of all the new stuff. I think a lot of us geeky people sniff at those, and we race for the close button as fast as possible. Data shows that people actually cycle through that stuff pretty often. I was shocked. We get really good eyes and attraction and usage on those, so we learned from our data we're going to keep doing it. Things we won't do again. I mentioned this. We're not going to ship something big without posting it to the message center again, so mea culpa. We're not going to do that again. The other thing I didn't mention is that paint roller, it went to 100% of first release as the first wave. As Zohar mentioned, we have the ability to start small, 10%, 50%, 100% of first release. We're going to do that for everything now. I misspoke. We can actually go to first release users first. And we like that because those are the motivated people in the organization, the movers and shakers, the SharePoint experts, the people that we actually want to hear the most feedback from, so we start with those people. And again, I mentioned it, the big paint roller banner, lovely icon. I really liked that coming from design, but we're not going to paint over classic UI like that again in a fairly obtrusive way. And with that, I will hand back to Zohar.
Hi, Mike. Yeah. So just to continue that train of thought, the piece that Lincoln walked you through is how the experience is on our side when we release. I'd like to generalize that and say, here's where you guys can read the communication from us. For the folks that actually attended the session earlier, the Office 365, it went into depth on how each one of these places serve us well for communication. There's these five major things you need to keep in mind when we talk about communication. We have the newspaper or the blog, which is our press releases. This is the place where we announce big ta-da moments, as we call them, on large releases. Then there's another piece which you could forward look at what is coming. We call that the roadmap, so roadmap.office.com. You go there, you would see what is in development and what would be landing soon. All our May 4th event was then described in this place. We put it all on the roadmap and you could actually track it. And we now have there things that we would land towards the end of the year and then towards next Ignite. Let me walk into details about some of the things. The blog, as I mentioned, is the place where you would see these tiles. You could then sort it or filter it down to SharePoint and OneDrive and see specifically if that's the area that you're more interested in versus Exchange, Link, and other things that Office 365 ships. The roadmap I touched on, you could do the same filtering and you could look at all the functionality that we released on SharePoint and OneDrive. Message Center is the key thing that you guys should use day to day. And I'll talk about the phone app. But this is the place where you should spend as an IT administrator most of the time to get informed. We introduced a lot of rich functionality that was described this morning about translation and how you could read it in different languages. You could subscribe to this. In the past, you could subscribe to this via SCOM. Now we replace that with the admin experience. So if I switch to my phone, there's a phone app that you guys should... How many of you have the phone app? Okay, so quite a few. For the folks that don't have it, in general, you could manage the message center and other things via the administration app as it loads. So you could see a bunch of stuff specifically for getting informed or staying informed. You could see the queue of all the messages. It is one-to-one with what you would see in the message center. You also get the notifications, so you can subscribe via this tool and get notified. So the moment that this shows up in your message center, it would show up as a toast in your phone. And it gives you real-time view and time to prepare, so you don't need to pull the data. It actually gets pushed to you. And then the last thing I want to mention is also pay attention to the community. We have something that is called network.office.com, or you could go to techcommunity.microsoft.com. It's the same link where you would see technical information. We tend to post here more detailed information about the functionality and features. And the beauty here is that you could give us feedback and interact with us, and we have multiple Microsoft employees sitting on this community and responding and feeding the product group, or the product group is there directly looking at how appreciative you are from any change that we do or if there's anything that we need to fix quickly before we roll it out further. So that was the portion of how we communicate with you guys, the IT administrators. There's another portion of what Lincoln touched on, what investments do we do such that we properly communicate the change to your end users. A lot of that responsibility has traditionally, especially on-prem, was on the IT administrator himself. We now play a game as Microsoft to inform you and the users on the experience. This is what Lincoln was touching on, which we call the first run experience. It's a set of click-throughs that you could actually go and read more. This specific example is about the new list. Once you're done with this and you delete or remove it, then it doesn't show up again. It's really the first run experience. That is something we do for big ta-da changes. There's even a more subtle one that we do. These are the toasts, we call them, that pop up. And in this example, we introduce a button called Move To or Copy To. And you could then as an end user see now that you could use this functionality. Once you dismiss it, it doesn't show up again. And the last, I would like to call your attention to the bottom left, where for many of the functionality that we release, we also, because it's so disruptive, want to have you give you an opportunity to stay in Classic. So if you believe that it's not ready or it's breaking some of the functionality, for a while there, you will still have the ability to go to the Classic mode and stay on Classic. So that was the outgoing communication, and then there's the incoming communication and your responsibility. So let's talk a little bit about your responsibility in this journey. For us to be successful and for you to enjoy a stable service in our cloud, we look for you to give us feedback. There's different channels where you could give us feedback. I don't know if you've emphasized that enough, but with Satya coming into Microsoft, we have this new term called customer obsession. We spend a ton of time listening to your feedback, way more than ever before. There's different channels. We've got armies of people in Microsoft mining the data that you guys provide us, and then the product group itself is spending time in these channels to learn if we're doing the right thing. So it's really about investments we've done to bring your feedback directly into the product group that makes the decisions that eventually show up as features. A few places where you should spend time. One is very simple. In the product, we've plotted these black buttons called feedback. You click on them, it gives you a simple experience to either give us ideas or to give us feedback on functionality. You just describe the text, the functionality. You can take a screenshot in there, and then that reaches us. The other interesting thing or beautiful thing that it does, it actually reaches the community as well. So the feedback that you provide in the product shows up in what we call the user voice. How many of you have seen user voice? Great. User voice is a place where you could go visit and provide us additional ideas and feedback, but beyond that, you could also vote on feedback coming directly from the tool and then showing up there. The top set of items that we see in user voice, usually we go there, we interact, we tell you if we're thinking about it or if it's coming or when it's coming or if it has already shipped. So if you go to shipone.userverse.com, that's the place where you could give us feedback. Other direct feedback that you could give us, there's the community that I touched on. You go to network.office.com, you could interact with the rest of you guys, the community. There's tens of thousands of people in that community, plus multiple Microsoft employees responding to that. And then in the admin center, in the communication center itself, for every communication that we do, you could do the simple like, dislike. We look at that. We try to release the feature beyond first release when we actually cross the threshold that we think people like it. And we slow down when you say that you dislike it. And then you could also give us feedback, textual feedback there, if you dislike it, on what we should improve. And with that, I will switch gears to Chris that would talk to us about how do we invest in professionally retiring functionality. And then we'll open up for questions.
Thanks, Ohar. So I've presented in 5 sessions throughout the week, in addition did a few theater sessions, and I have the great joy to follow my esteemed colleagues who talk about all the ways we roll out new toys and candy, and you know, choose your favorite holiday villain, and I need to sort of discuss the ways that we approach taking things that we need to retire out of the service. So it's really important for us to understand that it's a decision that we do not take lightly. But when we look at historic functions in the platform and understanding what usage patterns are, we already have a well-established set of principles for how functionality gets removed from shipping product in the on-premises environment. What we are evolving toward is being much clearer about how we decide to take something out of the service that people may have been relying on. We're greatly appreciative of all the usage that we get from our customers. And again, this is something that we take on only for a couple of specific reasons. If we see that usage is weak on something, and we understand that the complexity of the product is something that can impede a better experience for more users over time, there's a certain amount of technical debt in every product. And if we have solution sets that are based on older technology, that are based on things that we know are inefficient for the operation of the, they open up potentially issues with performance or aren't adopting the latest security patterns, for a number of reasons, we may make a careful decision to take something out of the service. This, you know, as Lincoln was talking about before, is also something that we are getting better at. We recognize we may not have always landed that message as clearly as possible. One thing that we definitely know that we can't do anymore is it's not fair. We have not earned the right to talk about removing things until we've identified, at a minimum, a path forward. So the first principle that guides deprecation is we have to identify a successor technology before we can talk about taking something away. The second major step for us in a deprecation decision is we need to understand the critical business scenarios that the older technology was supporting and make sure that in our successor technology, we've met or exceeded our ability to solve the same customer scenarios with the technology that we're rolling forward with. Once we have those two bits of technology side by side, we get great telemetry throughout the service on usage. We may have a principle that the new shiny thing is going to take over. We really want to see that that new technology actually is getting the usage the way that we've intended, and that people have shifted from the older way of doing something to solving the scenario with the way that we're rolling out new technology in the future. And then finally, how we are clear about that. Our general principle around deprecation is that we are going to announce the deprecation of a solution with advanced warning. It is not our intention to suddenly remove things from the service. I've been involved in some discussions online with people who think, you know, actually think that Microsoft wants to wake up one morning and suddenly decide, not really into document libraries anymore, see ya. That's really not our intention. We really appreciate the commitment and trust and loyalty that you've all shown in choosing Microsoft solutions there. It is our intention to communicate changes like this well in advance, something that's measured at a minimum in months. And then from that point, identifying a date in the future for a staged withdrawal of functionality from the service. Typically, when we can, something that, for example, we're not going to add this service to net new environments, but existing environments are going to be maintained. And then after a period of time, if we need to remove functionality further, communicating that well in advance using all of the channels that we've talked about. The way that we approach this for on-premises is a little bit different. We have a more clearly established pattern. Our general guidance around deprecation of functionality from on-premises is at the time we release a new version of server, we reserve the right to say, we will be deprecating function X in the next version of server. That's a pattern that's been pretty consistent in Microsoft for a number of years and one that we intend to obviously commit to and sustain as we move forward with our on-premises solutions for SharePoint. So I hope that we're being as clear as possible. Please communicate back with us. We recognize we haven't always done this right, and you've still been faithful to us, and we want to make sure that we're learning and doing this better. Our learnings from these experiences hopefully help us get clearer about how we communicate things before. You know, Lincoln was walking through some of the ways that we learned about the rollout of new functionality. We hope that we're also doing the same thing about how we take things out of the service. So that said, Sohar, let me have you come on up, and then we're going to open this up for some questions. Thank you.
So I hope you guys internalized how we jack around with the service without you guys noticing. And it gave you an opportunity to see some of the insights and the decisions we make and the complexity of rolling it out in a way that we believe we have all good intents to promote the proper collaboration and facilitate, you know, you guys being successful in your businesses. Questions?
Thanks for the session. With respect to things like modern lists that are coming, There was an announcement in the message center, hey, this new feature is coming, this new big giant feature is coming, which is great, much better than document libraries. Is there any mechanism for me to know, other than clicking into a settings screen every day, that the feature is actually there? I mean, I see that this pattern is very consistent, that we get this notice, but not when it actually lands in our tent.
Yeah, it's a, so thank you for the question. This is feedback we've been hearing for a while now, and are attempting to address the challenge of today the communication is pretty broad and you need to go there proactively and refresh. And we're also hearing in many cases large enterprises, they discover that the feature lit up when the help desk actually starts getting support calls. We will be investing in the next 12 months in improving there to the point where initially first release will know. Once we cross the line from the Microsoft and the preview to the first release would know exactly when their tenant selected customers would see it. We have slightly technical, I won't overwhelm you with the technical challenge, but today the way that we roll into production, we just say percentages. We don't point fingers at any individual customers. So it would be for us investing in letting you know at least, hey, yesterday this feature was enabled in your tenant, which we hear is already an improvement. It's not a heads up, but it's an improvement on where you're at today.
I just wanted to append something on that. We also recognize that your time is valuable. And as we take technology and roll it from through the different tranches that we've mentioned of first release and for production, it's our general intention to make sure that as we're starting a first release flight and as we're starting a general release flight, that we are making sure we get communications in Message Center. We are very careful about looking, you know, despite how quickly we think we can move, we do look at the health of a flight, as Zohar was mentioning, to figure, can we move more quickly or do we want to hold? If every time we went from 1%, 5%, 10%, 50%, 100% in every environment, for every feature in a complex environment like SharePoint, it led to something in Message Center, the information glut around that, we also were very mindful of. We're working at ways to get that to be much more just in time. Totally hear you. It is, you know, hey, this new shiny thing is coming, and just keep checking your mailbox every day, and hopefully sometime in the next 3 to 6 months you'll get it. Totally, we've heard this, we keep hearing this. Everyone who feels that way, totally within your rights to hold us to do something more, and we're working on it.
Thank you for the presentation. One thing regarding the retirement of old functionality, I sort of sense a slight change in both how you communicate about those things and also on what happens in practice, basically. A couple of years ago, I remember you were speaking that old functionality or breaking changes would be allowed, announced a year in beforehand. And now, if you, for example, look at what happened with removal of sandbox code from Office 365, that was announced in only a month, basically. So is this intentional? Are you intentionally sort of making the time from announcing the removal of old functionality the shorter, sort of the time until it gets removed?
So the ways, as I mentioned before, it's something that we're trying to learn and get better at. So the removal of functionality from the user code service was communicated in 2014. And the ways that it then, more than 2 years later, was removed, could we have done things more clearly? Absolutely. And we're going to try to get better at that. And, you know, appreciate the feedback on that. And I ask that you trust us. And we are working real hard to make sure that we are much clearer. As I mentioned before, it is our intention, as much as possible, to give you months, if not years, of time before we make it disruptive, especially if we're going to do a change that is disruptive, like removing functionality out of the service.
And then I would add that in all the feedback channels that I've mentioned, you know, you guys need to provide us feedback. If you think that it's rolling out too quickly, then we have the intent to move in the pace that you can allow. And then we would slow down things or be sensitive to, you know, specific cases and do all these exceptional gymnastics to facilitate whatever you, as long as it's reasonable asks. More questions? Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming to Ignite. This is the last session of Ignite. Have a safe ride home.